Peruvian masses of people, the indigenous Peruvians, the working class Peruvians, that Peru could in fact stand on its own two feet and not have to be dependent on the U.S. In this very parasitic, exploitative relationship. And Europe is just as guilty in this as well. And so,
how is Europe guilty?
Europe is guilty because they're playing more of the from the corporate side of things. Their corporations, the mining, are all corporations that are in Europe, and as well as the U.S. It's kind of like a joint venture.
So many people have referred to the EU being a vassal state of the U.S. Let's look into the situation more with the U.S. interference, Arnold August, as both of you have indicated that that occurred. Now, Arnold August, you said that just a day earlier, before this went down, you had the U.S. ambassador meet with the opposition. And we also understand that a day before, U.S. ambassador, who is a former CIA agent, also met with, I guess, the defense minister, from what we understand, a retired brigadier general, which then we understand he ordered the military to turn against Castillo. So this is not something that has happened in a matter of just 24, 48 hours. As both of you have indicated, in a sense, this is a scheme, a plan that the U.S., in conjunction with different players within Peru's political apparatus, had planned before. Am I correct to look at it that way?
Yes, I think that's absolutely correct. And you and our guest just mentioned the United States and other actors such as Europe. Allow me to point out to another actor that is much more vigorous in support of the coup than the Europeans, and that is Canada. You know, Canada is right from the start took the following position, saying they issued a one-sentence statement saying Canada would like to express its deep concern over Castillo's attempt to dissolve Congress and establish a government of exception in Peru. Such destabilizing actions risk jeopardizing Peru's adherence to democracy. And if that is not enough, another statement from Canada came out the day later. Canada calls for calm and invites all actors. That's a very famous line from Canada, all actors. When the revolt was taking place in Chile a couple of years ago, and it was obvious the use of the army and the Carabineros in actually killing and maiming people, they always call for all actors to avoid tensions and all that. Now, I cannot help myself to make the comparison. While the Trudeau government jumps right from start one, run from game one, the first day, in opposing the demonstrations of millions of people in Peru, indigenous workers, against the coup. In Iran, they support the U.S.-led riots that are taking place in Iran. So I think it's important for people to really have a good grasp of the dirty role that Canada plays through Justin Trudeau as the most faithful ally of U.S. imperialism, not only in Latin America, but internationally.
Sure. Well, they have played destructive roles when we go through the different actions that have been executed, with U.S. being in the lead in many of them. But before we get to that, let's look at some of the reactions, Libre Sankara, of Latin American leaders, because you have many of the governments. At last count, there were seven of them, where you have Mexico, Argentina, Bolivia, Colombia, Honduras, Venezuela, Cuba, and some other nations at this point, who have criticized and refused to recognize Peru's unelected coup regime, as they have called it. Is that going to make a difference in the fate of Peru and where it's headed when you have this opposition of this magnitude?
I think what it symbolizes is a shift towards multipolarity, a shift away from U.S. Imperialism and its role in Latin America in general. I think things like this will become more frequent. I don't know that it will have tangible presence in Peru itself. I think the Peruvian people, the ronderos that come from these indigenous communities that helped to have this historical victory to elect Pedro Castillo as president. I think between them and Peru Libre and other left factions in Peru will ultimately play the most important roles. But I think what these statements help do is to help the Peruvian people understand that they have the solidarity of other countries. I don't know that these countries are going to send any real firm resources to help to help Peruvians fight against this. But I also see countries like Mexico trying to talk with the government to offer Pedro Castillo asylum. In fact, when he realized what was happening, he tried to go to the Mexican embassy, and he was barred from doing that by his security detail, and shortly after he was detained. And so we have to be very vigilant of what's going to continue to happen. Unfortunately, more Peruvians are going to be killed because, again, they democratically elected Pedro Castillo. They want him in office. They are going out into the streets, but this is being met by the far right that has no problem killing people, that has no problem harming its own citizens to maintain its own greedy benefit that these far right Fujimorista type of people hope to continue. They want to continue being in positions of power and exploiting their own people and getting business deals. And so the seven countries, and I'm sure there will be more to follow, are simply showing their solidarity with the working class people. Hopefully that shows up in tangible ways. But as in the foreseeable future, it doesn't look like they're going to send any material things. This is symbolic, and it's helpful sure. to build morale, but that's about it.
Okay, well, Arnold August, our guest, also mentioned the pink tide. And we've seen what has happened in the past couple of years in terms of the political landscape that is characterized by the term pink tide, where you have these left-wing presidents pretty much come into power because they are the ones that actually represent the true people out in the broad economy and society of the different countries that they represent. I mean, one of the most, prolific ones would be the Brazilian President Lula da Silva that came out in some sense, and him winning the presidency was very was an eye-opener, I would guess, from the U.S. perspective, because he made one announcement, and that was how he wants there to be a move away from the dollar. He wants the local economies of each country to deal in their national currencies. Are we looking at this to have ticked off the U.S., this new wave of left-wing presidents, as they say, and therefore they are now counter-reacting to that?
Yes, I would say so. I just add, both of you rightly mentioned all of the presidents and leaders of the Latin American countries that took a firm stand publicly in support of Castillo. I would add one other book that just came out, I think, yesterday, and that is ALBA, which includes many countries, including in the small Caribbean island. In terms of the current situation, I think aside from what happened to Cristina Kirchner a couple of weeks ago, this attempt here is the first attempt of a coup since the election of Lula in Brazil. You know, I think that is going to make a big difference. Brazil, of course, as everyone knows, it's a major player in Latin America and through BRICS. It has important ties with other important countries such as China, India, South Africa, and Russia. And the way China is now increasingly making its presence felt on the international scale with regards to other countries, for example, just a few days ago, making a clear statement in support of the right of Palestine to its own state with its capital in East Jerusalem. The United States might have some surprises, as not only the countries in Latin America that perhaps feel more confident, more bold since the election of Brazil, but even internationally, this may build up further, and it may be a very hard situation for the United States and its allies to face while Castillo is in prison. And everyone is against that in Peru and many countries of the world, not only in Latin America.
Okay. The fact that you came out right away, pretty much, Libra Sankar, and talked about how you have Castillo that represents the indigenous population there in Peru, and the fact that he is the one that was able to edge out in the vote because he had the common people be on his side. Tell us the way that this has backfired for the ones that were in control of the major industries and how they felt threatened. And perhaps, given the fact that they have connections, and I'm just making the connection here, and whether it's accurate or not is up for you to tell us, and that these, for example, we know that Castillo brought in a lot of new ministers, and I'm guessing just that fact itself might have threatened the livelihoods of some of these people who, I don't know if I want to call them oligarchs or not, but, you know, the ones that were in power in different sectors and fields of the economy. And therefore, they obviously sided with the motion to try to oust Castillo. And that's where the U.S. connection also comes in, because you have Peru that has a lot of important natural resources, gold being the number one, from what I understand, natural resource of Peru. Is that a correct reading into this?
Yeah, that is an accurate reading. And in fact, I mean, Peru, since the colonial times, has been taken advantage of by foreign interests. And so what Castillo represents is indigenous working class, right? Like, this is somebody that when they were giving speeches, they spoke in the indigenous language, which brought a lot of the elected officials to anger, because their status quo is to speak Spanish, to kind of take on this more, it's not educated to speak like that, and this demonization of indigenous people in a country that's mostly indigenous, they just until Pedro Castillo, were not in positions of power. They weren't being appointed. Their perspectives were not being brought into policies. Their perspectives were not being brought into the proposed new constitution, which is something that has also been happening during the peak tide. A lot of these left governments have been rewriting their constitutions or codifying new laws. For example, Cuba just passed its family codes, and Chile, unfortunately, didn't vote, but they were looking to rewrite their own constitution. And so Pedro Castillo also represents and came from the Peru Libre Party, which, you know, he appointed a Marxist-Leninist in his cabinet, which unfortunately the individual had to step down because shortly after being put into his position, he got death threats. And this just shows how status quo the career politicians want to keep Peru. Again, Peru, with such rich economy and such access to resources, has been a country that has been overexploited and underdeveloped. And this works to the benefit of these career politicians and to foreign interests instead of the interests of Peruvians. And so Pedro Castillo represented and still represents a move towards a new type of Peru, a Peru that is moving left and closer to a Peru for Peruvians themselves. And so this scares people that don't want that to be the reality because it doesn't benefit their pockets. Okay. And so that's why millions of Peruvians are out in the streets protecting and asking for his release.
All right. Final question. Obviously, I have to ask, where is Peru going to be headed, Arnold August? I mean, we're looking, and I can't help every time I hear the word indigenous to think of Bolivia. And actually draw a parallel here, because we've seen what happened. And interestingly, whether it's a coincidence or not, he had a woman there also who's now in jail, but she was the one that replaced the president there. Right. At this point, we're looking at Boluarte, who has said, I'm not stepping down, even though there's protests that are happening, even though there are deaths that are occurring, and there have been given strict orders, I guess, to treat the protesters harshly. What are we looking at in terms of the future of Peru just in the next weeks or months to come?
Well, I think that this whole move by the United States and its allies to organize this soft coup against Castillo, the fact that the main target, as you've been mentioning the last few minutes, are indigenous people, poor people, this could have the resistance to the U.S. move and its, you know, oligarchy in Peru can have a very serious backlash against them, because, you know, people, indigenous people, are very, very, very interested in defending their own cultural heritage. We saw that in Bolivia, when despite the bloody attempts to keep the revolution down, they actually fought and won back their right to be the governing force in the country. And I think the most important thing now is that there are people on the street who are demanding a constituent assembly. And a constituent assembly, in my view, is key. I think that when the Chavez won power in 1998 and was installed in 1999, the first thing he did was to organize a constituent assembly whereby people at the base were able to formulate and develop positions with regard to a new constitution. And if anything comes out of the situation in Peru, that there's a more deeper move for a constituent assembly, then it will be great.
Thank you for that. Arnold August, author and journalist from Montreal, a pleasure. And Libra Sankara, thank you. Contributor at the Troika Collective from Miami. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Miko Batawe and the team, it's goodbye.
In the limelight.
An environmental group has claimed the Pentagon vastly understands the number of potential victims of PFAS toxins on its bases. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote, exposure to toxic forever chemicals on U.S. military bases has affected more than three times as many people as the Pentagon admitted, tainting the drinking water used by over 600,000 troops and family members, an environmental watchdog has claimed. At issue are chemicals known as PFAS, such as perfluorooctosulfonic and perfluorooctoonic acid, which are used in firefighting foam, industrial lubricants, and hydraulic fluids. The Pentagon acknowledged in April that water supplies had been tainted by PFAS on dozens of its bases, mostly by the flame retardants used by military firefighters, but it pegged the number of people exposed at around 175,000. The scale of the exposure was vastly understand, mostly because the Pentagon included only bases where water levels had PFAS contaminants greater than 70 parts per trillion PPT, an old EPA standard, the Washington-based Environmental Working Group EWG said recently. The EPA's new advisory level for unsafe PFAS levels is anything over 1 PPT, though that standard hadn't been finalized. The Pentagon report left out several major bases where contamination levels have exceeded 70 PPT, including Fort Leavenworth in Kansas and Fort Bragg in North Carolina. The EWG said, in fact, the water at Fort Leavenworth was found to have 649 PPT of PFAS contaminants. An additional 88 bases fell below 70 PPT but exceeded the revised standard for safe PFAS levels. PFAS are known as forever chemicals because once released into the environment, they do not break down and can build up in our blood and organs, the EWG said. The chemicals have been linked to increased risk of kidney and testicular cancer, as well as pregnancy complications and harm to reproductive systems. The group added that the Pentagon report also failed to account for service members who were exposed to contaminated drinking water provided on bases by non-military utilities. The study offers only a current snapshot of the number of people on the affected bases, ignoring the millions of past residents who could have been exposed. A Pentagon spokesman told Military.com that the military has worked to address contaminants in drinking water since 2016 and remains committed to its cleanup duties. Spectrum News also reported more than 600,000 service members have been exposed to toxic PFAS chemicals in drinking water at bases in the U.S., according to a report from the Department of Defense and analysis from the Environmental Working Group. PFAS are a group of more than 600 chemicals found in everyday household items like non-stick cookware and to-go food containers. The chemicals are also found in firefighting foam used regularly for training and putting out fires involving jet fuel on many military installations. The compounds are sometimes known as forever chemicals because they do not break down in nature and can build up in the human body. The chemicals have been linked to increased cancer risk, harm to fetal development, and reducing the effectiveness of vaccines. The internal DoD assessment recognizes many of these harms, but it ignores the increased risk of kidney and testicular cancer from PFAS exposure, which is well documented by other federal agencies, according to the Environmental Working Group. According to this website, the U.S. Department of Defense study found PFAS at 70 parts per trillion or more in the drinking water at 24 bases. New Environmental Protection Agency rulers released over the summer put a limit of 1 ppt for PFAS in drinking water. In the 2019 defendant budget, Congress required the Department of Defense to produce a report on how many members of the armed services have been exposed to the chemicals. PFAS pollution from firefighting foam on military bases has attracted national attention, including a case at Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point at North Carolina coast. The foam polluted groundwater on base and in the surrounding communities. The U.S. Navy has been working to clean up the water around the base since mid-1990s. The Environmental Working Group, an environmental nonprofit in Washington, D.C., said there are 400 U.S. military installations in the states and overseas with known PFAS contamination in drinking water supplies and more than 300 with suspected contamination. Fort Leavenworth in Kansas has the highest levels with 649 ppt, followed by Picatinny Arsenal in New Jersey with more than 100 ppt, according to EWG. The U.S. Army's largest base, Fort Bragg in North Carolina, recorded 98 ppt, the nonprofit said. PFAS is found in the blood of almost everyone in the United States, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. A separate Department of Defense report released in September said the military is limiting the use of firefighting foam and looking for alternatives that do not include PFAS. The department is also offering blood tests to firefighters. The U.S. Defendant's Department report focused on members of the military and veterans, but did not consider families who live on base, including at places like Fort Bragg and Fort Leavenworth. Some of the most serious impacts from PFAS are in children and pregnant women, according to EWG. PFAS exposure during pregnancy and childhood is linked to numerous health harms, including pregnancy-induced hypertension, low birth weight, shorter duration of breastfeeding, thyroid disruption, reduced vaccine effectiveness, and harm to reproductive systems, said EWG toxicologist Alex Temkin.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. قالوا لئن لم تنتهي يا نوح لتكونن من المرجومين.
They said, if you do not desist, O Noah, you will surely be of those who are stoned.
قال رب إن قومي كذبون.
He said, my Lord, indeed my people have denied me.
Brothers and sisters, as you were with us, we were discussing these verses of chapter Shu'ara.
قال رب إن قومي كذبون. فَافْتَحْ بَيْنِي وَبَيْنَهُمْ فَتْحًا وَنَجِّنِي وَمَنْ مَعِي مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ
Said Noah, O my Lord, verily my people have belied me.
فَافْتَحْ بَيْنِي وَبَيْنَهُمْ Judge you then between me and them, and deliver me and the believers that are with me.
As we said in the previous episode, this threatening is one of the most important weapons of the Prophet's opponents, and in this case, it is as well. Now, Prophet Noah complains to Allah, but his complaint was for people's rejecting the religion.
not for that threatening, not for the threat of stoning him. So he turns to Allah, complains to him, and then implicitly asks Allah, now that there is no other way to guide this group of people, he subhanahu wa ta'ala, may put a separation between him and those people, and then he may judge between them. The verse says, فَافْتَحْ بَيْنِي وَبَيْنَهُمْ. Judge you, then, between me and them. The Arabic word fath, as some philologists have said, originally means to open and to adjudicate in a cause, and removing a shut, which has two forms. Sometimes it has sensible aspects, like fathul bab, opening the door, and sometimes it has some kind of spiritual aspect, which is not visible, it is somehow abstract, like opening the sorrow and wiping sadness. For example, fathul qadiyah means to judge and put an end to a conflict. Anyway, Prophet Noah adds as follows. He requests Allah, and deliver me and the believers that are with me. نَجِّنِي وَمَن مَعِيَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. This statement denotes that the believers are inside the Prophet's prey, since Prophets always pray that the problems of the people and society be solved, and this is not an exception. This is how the Prophet is caring about his people. على مر الزمان تألقا
وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Now, this is really interesting how he cares about these believers. You may remember in the 114th verse, he said that I'm not going to drive away the believers. وَمَا أَنَا بِطَارِدِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ because it is from among the Prophet's missions, first and foremost mission, to improve people, to invite them to monotheism, that they want to deliver the society from the unbelievers. So that is why they invite people to monotheism. He said, مَا أَنَا بِطَارِدِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. I am not going to drive away the believers. And now in this verse, he asks Allah, نَجِّنِي وَمَن مَعِيَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. Oh Allah, I ask you to deliver me, and not just me, the believers that are with me, the ones who have believed in me in this long time of invitation, in this such long hard time that I used to invite people to monotheism, and no one believed me except a few. And interestingly, one good sign of understanding who truly these mu'mineen are, is how the others treat them, how the others respect them. The verse in the, from among the previous verses said, أَنُؤْمِنُ لَكَ وَاتَّبَعَكَ الْأَرْذَلُونَ. Shall we believe in you while the meanest follow you? The people did not know the criterion for measuring the value. They considered that criterion was property and wealth. But the true criterion is merely that belief, that understanding of oneness and monotheism of the Almighty. And now, this sign of how the others treat them like mean objects. They don't even consider them as human beings. Sometimes even these people are the ones who are considered in praying of the prophets of the Almighty Allah. نَجِّنِي وَمَن مَعِيَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Protest through Brussels on Friday was organised by Belgium's three largest unions. They claim the country's federal government and EU authorities are failing to adequately help citizens during the current escalating cost of living crisis. Many also question how the EU is able to set aside at least 20 billion euro for Ukraine in 2023.
We are all against this war because it's about imperialism, it's about money. There's more behind. It's not only about Ukraine and about Russia.
Ukraine is a key point, but our people here as well. And the money is there. People have to be taxed properly, especially the 1%.
It's important to help the Ukrainians, but what about the people here in Europe and in Belgium?
The EU's energy sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have backfired. Oil, gas, diesel, petrol and electricity prices are through the roof. Inflation across the Eurozone is running at 10%. However, wages are not going up.
Many people can't buy the good food. Many people can't pay
for our apartment.
Landlords are taking advantage from the inflation to raise the rents.
Landlords will now have another excuse. The European Central Bank increased interest rates by a half of 1% on Thursday.
And based on the substantial upward revision to the inflation outlook, we expect to raise them further.
The national strike on Friday resulted in flight cancellations, according to Brussels Airport. There were also major disruptions to tram, bus and metro services. Union members, not just here in Belgium, but across the EU, are warning of protests throughout 2023, which will impact public services, unless their cost of living concerns are addressed. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The people providing the nation with care, asking to be looked after by the authorities. Some of the tens of thousands of UK nurses who have walked off their jobs demanding better pay and conditions. Lakshmi has worked for the NHS for 22 years.
Shortages of nurses have led to less staff, and you can't care for people if you don't have a staff to care for. So it's person safety mainly, and if here comes, obviously people are leaving profession due to unfair pays, overworked, stressed, and so does their staff.
Hailed as heroes during the pandemic, nurses up and down the country, Save Scotland, are staging two 12-hour strikes this week and next. Their representative body, the Royal College of Nursing, says they had no choice when the government rejected calls for talks on NHS pay. The RCN says nurses are 20% worse off in real terms today than they were in 2010. Due to successive below-inflation pay rewards.
Things have gotten so bad that hospitals, one in four hospitals, are having to set up food banks for nurses and for other staff. This is unprecedented. But we're not just fighting for pay, we're fighting for the survival of the NHS.
One reason for that concern is the number of staff leaving the profession. 25,000 nursing staff have quit the NHS in the past year. The government says the demand for a 19% pay rise is not affordable. The unions argue the money is there. The nurses' strike is part of a wave of industrial action sweeping the UK this year, with the strikers demanding better pay and conditions as a worsening cost of living crisis pushes more and more people into dire straits.
The unions are warning that the strikes this month could be the beginning of a longer period of action if governments refuse formal pay negotiations or if future talks do not result in satisfactory outcomes. Saeed Pourreza, London.
The Saudi-led coalition has once again detained two fuel ships, preventing them from reaching the crucial western port of Hodeidah. The Yemeni Petroleum Company says the two fuel vessels were detained despite obtaining the necessary permits and being cleared from inspection in the port of Djibouti.
Preventing fuel ships from entering Yemen continues to take its toll on the country's battered economy. It has led to an increase in food prices and basic supplies and has made life harder for the Yemeni people as Saudi Arabia continues its blockade.
Rashid Al-Haddad, an economic expert, says the seizure of the fuel ships is just one of many war tactics employed by the Saudi-led coalition to put pressure on the Yemeni people.
The Saudi aggression is always exerting effort to make life difficult for all Yemenis by depriving them of fuel resources. 70% of fuel enters the country through the port of Hodeidah, which affects 22 million people. The Saudi-led coalition is using this as a war tactic, not against Ansarullah, but against the Yemeni people as a collective punishment.
Considering the expected rise in shipping prices, Dalal, a local fruit merchant, says he will be forced to raise his prices if no fuel enters the country.
This watermelon is normally sold for 1,500 Yemeni riyals when fuel is available. However, whenever they prevent fuel from entering Yemen, the price of this watermelon increases from 1,500 to 3,000 Yemeni riyals.
This blockade has caused an economic crisis. The price of wheat and fuel have increased. We don't have anything and we're not even being paid salaries. We're besieged from all aspects of life.
The Yemeni government says the illegal seizure of Yemeni oil is an act of war and a violation of Yemen's sovereignty, which will be met with force if continued. Yusuf Maori, Sana'a.
As they came together for a summit in Brussels, EU leaders were acutely aware that energy storage tanks will run dry in the coming months. There are still major divisions in the EU over a gas price cap and a proposal to buy energy from international suppliers as one single customer.
It is important that we do not outbid each other as member states, but that we use the market power to purchase gas.
It's thought a deal might be finalised on Monday. There are plenty of other divisions within the 27-nation EU. Austria is blocking Romania and Bulgaria from the border-free Schengen area. Meanwhile, funding for Hungary is being withheld over rule of law issues.
Russia is blackmailing us every day. But if we start to blackmail each other, this is not good. And this is absolutely not good for the European Union.
A dark shadow of corruption is hanging over the EU. It emerged last Friday that Qatar has been bribing politicians and officials.
This scandal is a very serious matter indeed, which can shake trust in democracy and the parliamentary system. Thus, it is good that the Belgian authorities are thoroughly investigating.
At their summit, EU leaders refused to be drawn on the question of possible sanctions against Qatar. However, they signed off on more sanctions against Russia and also Iran. The leaders agreed to provide at least 20 billion euro to Ukraine in 2023. Campaigners say they should be doing more for their own citizens.
So many people in poverty, like everything what's going on from the crisis from 2008 until now, nothing changed.
It's clear that things could soon get a lot worse if the EU fails to secure a reliable long-term energy source at the right price. The costly Ukrainian refugee crisis is also growing by the day. So the final EU leader summit of 2022 has now concluded. Analysts say the unprecedented challenges they will face in 2023 could stretch the EU project beyond breaking point. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
While the West is expanding sanctions against Moscow and Tehran over their military cooperation, the potential for developing relations between the two countries is huge, since Russia and Iran are under tough Western sanctions and therefore have little to fear.
The will of our governments is interconnected. Our high-ranking officials and our peoples do not pay attention to the shouts of the entire West and continue to strengthen their ties and interaction.
At the press conference held in Moscow, Iran's ambassador to Russia summed up the outcome of relations between Moscow and Iran in 2022. He noted that Russia's ruble is used in more than 40% of trade between the two countries and that the Russian currency may become the main one in bilateral trade. According to his remarks, Tehran supported the idea of using the ruble as the main currency in regional unions such as the EAEU. He also referred to efforts to integrate the national payment systems MIR and Shetab as part of financial and economic cooperation between Russia and Iran. According to the Iranian envoy, Russia and Iran are seeking to reduce the dominance of certain currencies, including the dollar, in bilateral trade and economic relations. Jalali further said the automotive industry and space sector have become another field of cooperation between the two countries. In August, Russia launched remote sensing satellite Hayam into orbit on behalf of Iran.
As for our negotiations, I want to say that negotiations between our respective organizations in the field of outer space are ongoing on a regular basis.
Iran is investigating the possibility of producing cars jointly with Russia. Two leading automakers of the Islamic Republic, Saipa and Iran Hadro, took part in last summer's exhibition in Moscow and held negotiations with the Russian side. In addition to the joint production, the two countries are also discussing the possibility of sending Iranian cars to Russia. Russian and Iranian officials have time and again said that the two countries are determined to further expand bilateral cooperation. They have expressed confidence that the aim will materialize despite all the challenges the two nations might face, given the numerous capacities the two sides have. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
In a mass rally and under a sea of green flags, men and women from all walks of life came out to take part in Hamas's 35th anniversary celebration. Hamas, who was founded in 1987, won the Palestinian parliamentary elections in January 2006, but remains blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime. The movement has fought several wars against the Israeli regime since 2007. The resistance movement said that Al-Quds is at the center of the Palestinian struggle for freedom.
Hamas asserts today that Al-Quds is at the core of our struggle against the Israeli occupation. We're also sending a message of Palestinian unity. As we mark this day, we want to thank all Muslims and Arabs who support the Palestinian people, especially the Axis of Resistance.
People from all walks of life attending the rally called on all Palestinian factions to increase the resistance against the Israeli occupation to bring about the liberation of Al-Quds.
We will continue to support Hamas and the resistance until we liberate every inch of our land. We call on the Muslim nation to support Palestine and to support Al-Quds. People came out today to send a strong message of support to the resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Hamas supporters said they want the Israelis to know that the Islamic Resistance Movement is a force to be reckoned with.
We are here today to express our support to Hamas on its anniversary and to tell the whole world that Palestinians are supporting the resistance. Hamas has a very strong military wing that continues to grow. Hamas, along with all the resistance factions, will continue to fight for the sake of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
35 years on, Hamas continues to garner support due to its adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime.
People here say that despite years of siege and multiple wars, Hamas movement has managed to defy all odds and survive all attempts to weaken it. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The implementation of a comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran is getting a kickstart as a high-ranking delegation headed by the Chinese Vice Premier Hu Chunhua meets with Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi in Tehran. After his meeting with the Iranian president, the Chinese top official met with Iran's finance minister, where the two sides signed 16 MOUs to boost cooperation in different fields. Oil and gas, banking, investment, and strategic projects are the four fields of economic cooperation that are now on top of the agenda. There has already been a roughly 20% increase in trade, and the outlook for 2023 is even higher, according to Iran's finance minister. China is still Iran's biggest oil client, despite Washington's bid to bring Tehran's exports down to zero. And its close involvement in the built-out of Iran's manufacturing infrastructure is seen entirely in line with its Belt and Road Initiative. Analysts say this could represent a shift in the global balance of the oil and gas sector and create new markets where no U.S. dollars are involved.
Iran-China relations date back to the ancient Silk Road. Both countries have always had close ties, but over the past couple of years, their relations have become even more significant, with the U.S. putting pressure on China on the one hand and placing sanctions on Iran on the other. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Relatives, family members, and a group of activists gathered in front of the Swedish embassy in Tehran to demand the release of former Iranian judiciary official Hamid Nouri, who has been sentenced to life imprisonment by a Swedish court. The protesters condemned the politicized verdict issued against Hamid Nouri, who has been kept in solitary confinement for over 3 years.
On the one hand, by issuing a verdict against Hamid Nouri, the former Iranian official, based on accusations leveled by MKO terrorist group, Sweden has actually recognized the terrorist group and has allowed its members to live freely on its soil. On the other hand, during the legal procedure, Hamid Nouri has been deprived of his legal rights to defend himself properly in the court because he could not have access to an independent lawyer. He had no contact with his family for 8 months, and he has been under white torture.
Earlier, Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian called on the new Swedish government to immediately release Hamid Nouri, saying the politicized case of Nouri and efforts by the Mujahideen Khalq organization MKO terrorist group to disrupt a legal probe into the case have seriously harmed relations between Tehran and Stockholm.
We demand that justice be done with regard to my father, because according to many lawyers, the Swedish court verdict against my father was totally politicized and has no legal ground, and there is no concrete evidence for providing the accusations against my father. Therefore, we condemn the court ruling and demand his immediate release.
Swedish authorities alleged that Hamid Nouri was involved in the execution and torture of the MKO members in 1988. He has strongly rejected the allegations.
According to Iranian officials, keeping an individual in solitary confinement for 3 years is tantamount to torture, which runs against EU Convention on Human Rights. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
More picket lines and travel disruptions as tens of thousands of rail workers across Britain walk out. Represented by the RMT union, for months they have been asking the government for better working conditions and an increase in their pay to match the double-digit inflation. The government says the pay rises are unaffordable and has promised tough action against the unions. The unions say they're standing firm.
This latest round of strikes will show how important our members are to the running of the country, and will send a clear message that we want a good deal on job security, pay and conditions for our people. We have been reasonable, but it is impossible to find a negotiated settlement when the dead hand of the government is presiding over and blocking a resolution in these talks.
The strikes come at a cost to the economy in terms of lost working days, and the right-wing media here have been counting that cost. Yet that doesn't seem to have dented public support for the strikers.
The cost of living has gone up, so if they need more money, then they should get a pay rise.
I can see where the rail workers are coming from. They want a pay rise. They're seeing their bills go up every month, and they want to make sure they can support their families. At the same time, the government has a really tricky job on its hands to deal with inflation.
I support the strikes and things just because I feel like in certain sectors, a lot of people deserve a pay rise anyway at the minute, especially with inflation. But us as travellers on holiday in London as such, obviously it's been a bit of an inconvenience to us.
The rail workers' walkout comes amid a cost of living crisis that's seen food and energy prices soar to 40-year highs since the start of the Ukraine war, pushing millions of Britons into poverty. Staff at the crisis-hit National Health Service will also be going on strike this week for the first time in more than 100 years. And the number of sectors joining the strike action is only growing.
We may not see a general strike in the traditional sense, but the way things are going, it is likely that the different trade unions will synchronize and coordinate their action to maximize their leverage for a better deal with the government. Saeed Pariza, London.
Another attempt to stoke division in Iran by terrorists who would stop at nothing to reach their goal of creating instability. On December 9th, officials in Sistan and Balochistan province said the body of slain Sunni cleric Molevi Abdulwahid Righi, who was kidnapped a day earlier, has been found. According to police reports, on Thursday, a number of unknown individuals took him away in a car that had no license plate.
He was a good person who always tried to help people. He was my student. He always supported the Islamic Republic.
He was a patriotic and religious person. Iran's unity and territorial integrity was very important to him, and he even served in the Iran-Iraq War.
Days before he was kidnapped, he met a delegation representing leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in the province. Molevi Abdulwahid Righi always emphasized on the importance of allegiance to the Islamic Republic. In the province, he was seen as a symbol of unity between Shia and Sunni Muslims.
Sistan and Balochistan province is among the regions most affected by the recent farm-backed riots in the country. And this recent assassination is an obvious attempt to stoke division. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
This is a part of political divine will of the founder of Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam